Hey everybody, Coach here, and welcome to this week's episode. As always, I'm so glad you had a few minutes to join me. Hope you learn a little something. I enjoyed putting this one together, and it's something that not a lot of people think about, especially after having traveled across this country so many times, and most recently this past week, on how people approach landscaping when they have a lot of property. Well, you know, according to the calendar, we are officially in spring now. However, Mother Nature is kind of conspiring with that dude, old man winter. We have seen almost every form of weather on our rapid rush out west to get our cargo trailer and get back to Brook and Pond. We have seen sleet, snow, warm t-shirt temperatures, and frigid almost zero temperatures. We have had a couple of issues with our camper with frozen pipes and stuff. We're making headway, and we'll be there as of today, getting our cargo trailer, hooking everything up, spending some time with family, and then bombing back east. But I have also once again seen snow-free areas and some of the massive lawns that some folks keep. Green up in many areas is already underway, and I thought about some things that dovetails into our last episode regarding screening. Massive lawns and some options to have. The best of both worlds. Let's talk about that right here on Yard Coach Today.
Hey friends, Maestro here, just dropping a reminder to check out the podcast description for discount opportunities and any important links. Also, if you're listening to this podcast on a specific app, please don't forget to rate and review the show. It helps us grow and continue to provide these free podcasts.
Hey, welcome back and thanks for staying with me. Hey, I humbly kind of titled this episode Islands in a Sea of Green, but it's really kind of more than that. Let me make something clear, kind of the onset of this episode. Many people, and I have met lots and lots of them, literally, for one reason or another, love a vast, massive green carpet of lawn. I don't know exactly why. I've seen newfound friends spend 6 to 8 hours and sometimes more on a relatively wide cut mower in one day, spending time mowing such large lawn areas. And if you had it done by a so-called professional, holy cow, we're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month for someone to come in and maintain that. Hey, I would like you to take a moment and kind of drop a comment over on the YouTube channel or drop a comment right here. You can email me at youryardcoach@gmail.com and tell me if you have such a piece of landscape under your control. At your home, do you have a massive lawn? Like 3 football fields or bigger. And tell me why. You know, now, the recent friend that we stayed with, he lived on a 5-acre piece of property. And out of that 5 acres, half of it was kind of pseudo-dormant, but it was coming out, lawn area. And I asked him, I said, hey, Steve, how long does it take you to mow that thing? And he says, oh, you know, when it's really growing fast, I'll get out there around 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and I'll usually be done by mid-afternoon. I almost choked on my coffee. I said, so you spend almost 8 hours on mowing? He goes, yeah, why? And I just chuckled. I said, hey, I've not been exposed to such large lawn areas. I mean, out west where I live, I think all the lawn area I had at Wheat Patch Ranch totaled about, I'm going to guess, 6,000 square feet at the most. And it took me each week with a 21-inch walk-behind push mower, it took me about an hour and a half to edge, mow, and clean up. And I thought that I had walked into kind of a slavery position. I really did. Every week, I had to spend, you know, an hour and a half of my week mowing grass, which would only turn around and grow right back. And yet, I did like the appeal of freshly cut lawn, the smell of it, watching the sprinklers work, you know, in the mornings and the early light and stuff. I really kind of liked it, but I've kind of grown away from that. I'll share my thoughts of a former Western U.S. guy who always kind of faced warmer months with large amounts of irrigation It really was kind of a mandatory supplemental water, because our rain out there in NorCal, it basically shut off come about usually around the beginning of May. And the chance of seeing water from the sky again didn't really come around, at least in the last 10 years or more. It sometimes didn't come around till November. And I can remember growing up in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, we started to see rain sometimes as early as September. And then, it, you know, when I started to early adult years, I remember October, and then late October. And I can remember a few times with my kids, it was rainy around Halloween, you know, and we'd have to take umbrellas and stuff to go out and trick or treat with them type of thing. Nah, not so much now. Now, at Brook and Pond, we kind of have a totally different weather pattern. I mean, it snows in the winter, lawns go 100% dormant. And then, you know, in the summertime, the warmer months, there is, at least this past year, regular rain. And I don't see anybody with, at least yet, supplemental irrigation sprinkler systems installed back there. I'm sure there are a few, but this past year we did not need it. So out west, you know, you had the cost of fertilizing and mowing and edging and watering. You know, if you were on a city water bill, holy cow. At Weed Patch Ranch, if I was on a city water bill and not a well, I bet you I would have had, $700 a month in water cost, literally. So much different. But now in Zone 4, you know, lawn care is reduced from about 11 plus months that I had out west to about 5 months, maybe 6, depending, you know, year to year. You may be able to mow towards the end of May, and then maybe every couple of weeks I'm looking to, and then it shuts off right about, I'd say late October. I'm trying to remember the last time I actually mowed this past fall, and I think it was late October, early November. But the previous owner had left Brook and Pond lawn. He didn't do anything. He just let it grow and couldn't give two craps about whether the new owners come into a nice place or a place that's going to need a lot of maintenance. He was just that kind of guy. But in all my training back in my early years, I was always kind of taught that landscape design, that lawns were always kind of a complementary part of the landscape and not the dominant feature of a landscape. And I have certainly learned otherwise, especially east of the great Mississippi River. Oftentimes, some landscapes, not all, but some landscapes have kind of just stood still over the decades. And you have these massive, massive lawns, and then a little simple foundation planting bed around the house, and maybe a tree here and there, and that is it. And okay, I get it. It's the norm for that area of our country and maybe yours as well. So massive lawns on larger lots can be useful for some applications. They can. I mean, a couple that I can think of right off is like a big, big lawn for a kid's play area. Maybe your kids are into soccer or they're into football. Maybe you're into dog training and you have a dog course out there. And I'm sure there's other uses that people justify the time and energy and resources to maintain such a large, high maintenance part of the landscape, you know, for whatever they do. But what if you looked at it from another aspect, from a different colored glass to look through, that might be a little best of both worlds or something of an alternative that I think offers more visual appeal than just the green carpet that during the winter months, whether it's covered in snow or not, kind of goes semi-dormant and it has kind of a brown cast to it a little bit. So one of the things that I wanted to bring to your educational level is, what about islands? Islands that are in proportion to the overall lawn area that we're going to decorate and landscape. These islands can be populated with various trees and small shrubs, perennials, boulders, sitting areas, and you could even get gooched up if you wanted to and have large water features and stuff out there. And these islands, remember, when I say in proportion, if you have, let's say, an acre of lawn, you wouldn't want to go out there and put some 20 foot wide, 20 foot long type of island. That would be kind of a drop in the bucket type of thing. You would want something that is much larger and looks balanced with the overall green that is around it. The islands can be placed in such a manner that privacy screens can be attained, as well as wind screens or wind breaks, snow breaks, which goes along with what we discussed last episode about screening. Now, there was one particular viewing point that I had at my friend Steve's, where we were in the driveway and we looked out over this large lawn, and you looked right down to the property line of the neighbor, and then through the barbed wire fence of the property line, you looked right into their backyard and their pool and their spa area and their outdoor kitchen and their outdoor living area, basically. So I thought to myself, now you got to understand that Steve is a DIY landscape. He had some things going on there while we were visiting, and he asked my opinion about it, of the stuff that he was doing. And we had a brief discussion about some stuff, but I kind of kept the other part, the large lawn thing, kind of to myself. I wasn't there to impose my will or my example if it was not wanted. You know, it's that uncomfortable thing that you kind of want to be careful of. You don't want to insult somebody accidentally. So where we were, you could see that they had a small outdoor living area on the back part of their house. And they had a couple of different views. They had some views to the north that kind of went into a agricultural theme, I will say, and a few trees and stuff. And then you looked kind of to the east and northeast, and that's where this vast view out across the grass area, the driveway, and right into the neighbor's yard. So I thought to myself, now, if this was my place, well, you know, what would I do? Boom. Rather than thinking just within a box and saying, well, I would put up a privacy screen along the property line, which 90% of the time, that's what people do. They would go down there and start planting some form of evergreens that would eventually get up, and it would be a privacy screen. But then you'd still have this vast green carpet in front of it. And like I said earlier in the show, hey, that's okay. If that's your niche, fine. But I thought about how Steve here had no privacy. When we were there, he had a lot of southeast wind. And I'm not talking about a breeze. No, I'm talking about 20 mile an hour winds and sometimes gusts a lot higher. So I thought, in contrast, maybe some well-placed islands and not just property line plantings. The neighbor has tried the property line plantings. They have some spruces that are out there. And you can tell they were probably planted 10, 12 years ago. And they're just struggling. I don't know how they were planted or how they're maintained or anything, but it's just not working. So if you had, on Steve's side of the fence, you went out there and you designed up some big islands that kind of visually kind of overlap themselves. And from the viewing point of Steve's backyard, you would look out onto something that still has grass that you're going to have to maintain, but a lot less of it. And the islands are kind of free form. You have some of the taller tree-planted islands further away, and then the islands with smaller trees and other things as it gets up towards the driveway. So you have this visual uplift of your eye as you look down across this lawn area, and I think it would look good. It probably should have been done 15 years ago, and that way it would be up and running by now, but it would certainly eliminate or drastically reduce prying eyes from the neighbor. And maybe Steve gets along very well with his neighbor. I don't know. And it's a norm that I am really not accustomed to. I'm not used to walking out my backyard and looking out across my driveway. Hey, there's Bob, you know, and Bob's out there in his Bermuda shorts mowing his large lawn, and there's no privacy. There just isn't. So a little bit less mowing time, a lot more visual interest, and then a huge reward throughout the growing season of one kind or another. You probably have privacy year-round, and then during spring, summer, and fall, you have a lot more interest. You have fall color from some trees. You have perennial color from spring push and bloom all the way through the summertime, depending on what your choices are. Maybe you import some large boulders and you kind of decorate the islands with some boulders. Maybe you go even one step further and let those boulders kind of retain bermed up islands where you have really good imported soil, and then you plant that. And so you have an elevation already to have the trees and whatnot reach a privacy or a windbreak or a snowbreak level of performance a little bit sooner. And I think there's always some kind of innate pleasure that a human being gets, certainly a homeowner human being, when spring comes about and there's those spring surprises. And when I say that, I mean the push and the green up of a lawn area, or surprises in the form of spring bulbs pushing up through and eventually blooming before anything else, oftentimes before even trees, perennials, shrubs, anything kind of bounce back to life a little bit. Kind of a nice spring surprise. And I think if you approach it with a plant material list that has both deciduous trees and evergreens, plus deciduous shrubs and evergreen shrubs, and then perennials that die down to the ground, so you're not having to maintain anything during the wintertime, and it just gives you a lot more interest. You could also do large islands in your side yard, in your front yard. I can remember driving a couple days ago, and I happened to notice a piece of property right off of the highway. And now, personally, Maestro and I could never live right on a major interstate highway. It's just not something that I think we're cut out to do ever. But these folks, many years ago, because this was a very mature island on this property, they must have had 3 or 4 deep, and I'm talking probably 50 to 60 feet deep of evergreen trees. And then they had, you could kind of just peek in, and they had some large islands out in the front part of the house, some more screening over on the prevailing north and northwest part of the house. It was very insulated from view, very insulated from wind, and probably a very good survival tool as far as what the house was subjected to throughout the years. And, you know, traveling at 60 miles an hour, you only got to look at it for 10 seconds at the most. And I thought it was well thought out. And there weren't a lot of those that I saw on our trip out west. But this was one of them. It really was. Now, do I think all of that huge island planting, windscreen, snow screens, privacy screens, you think it did anything for the sound barrier? Probably not. You know, along the great I-80 out there, I think they probably have just become accustomed to hearing highway traffic, but at least you can't see it very much. So let's talk about landscaping these things just a little bit further. Most of the time, and I can't think, honestly, let's just look at all the time, you would approach something like this by following the same steps that you would in any other landscape project. And those steps are generally about 15 of them, and I have them outlined in a checklist available to you right there on our website, youryardcoach.com, and it becomes very, very easy to follow along from step 1 to step 15, and it's all pretty much the same. So how would I do it if I was a DIYer? Well, I would probably approach it on a Saturday morning with a cup of coffee and a couple of 2, 3, or 4 lengths of 50-foot hose. And I would go out there with Maestro, and we would just start laying out the islands by using the garden hoses. Just connect them together and just kind of lay them out and see how big they are compared to the overall area. And so you do some designing, some planning, some budgeting, and all that kind of stuff, just like the checklist says. And then you get down to the execution of it, the actual installation. Now, for some of you, you're going to hate me this next part. But don't hate me too much. And that is, You want all the green vegetation that is there, especially in some parts of the country and world that have the ability to regenerate after it's been cut. So, and some things I'll say, like simple dandelions. I mean, you cut them off at the surface and they're just going to pop back. Bermuda grass, if you try to cut it out and you don't have a dead root system, it's just going to come right back. And a lot of other grasses and a lot of other weeds. So what would I do? Yep, I'd probably spray it. And yeah, you could start with something environmentally conscious if you want to. You could get out there with the vinegar and salt and little soap solutions and have at it. But that's not going to take care of root systems very much, especially well-established root systems. I've seen it, and it's a fail. So I would probably use the help of a chemical friend, and I want those islands dead freaking dead before I come in there. And what I would come in there with next would be a sod cutter. I'd rent it from the local rental yard, box store, whoever you have, and then come in and cut those islands out and haul off. Don't just take that dead sod and turn it over. I don't suggest. I would strongly suggest that you move it off site, haul it away. Maybe if you have big properties, you can make a little mound of it somewhere else, but don't leave it in the spot where the new landscaping is going to go. So now you have gone through your demolition process. You've been able to establish where the islands are. You've cut them all out, and now you have this canvas, this blank canvas on which to start. Now your designing phase would have happened days, weeks, or months before you've actually started. And I would strongly urge you that if you're going to island up your sea of green, that you have your plant material on site by the time you have put a sod cutter in the ground. That way you can start placing your plants out there and do a layout and then stand back and look at it and go, all right, this does work for me. Or maybe that tree's a little too big and I made the island a little too small. And you can change and amend as you see fit. And hey, let's face it, not everybody's a landscape designer. So maybe you need help in the layout and placement of plant selection. Most of the time you can find landscape designers, or you can take your little design that you've made, take it down to your local reputable nursery that may have staff that can help you. I don't suggest Walmart staff, although there's a lot of good people that are there. They're just not landscape designers or nursery professionals. And the box stores, the big box stores, occasionally I have found some people that are relatively professional and knowledgeable, but that's certainly the exception, not the rule. So think about and look at places that would have a nursery professional, a nursery pro that can help you. And maybe they can help you pick out some trees and shrubs and perennials and whatever else you're going to get. And then you, on your little design, you can make little numbers or letters or whatever that can correspond to which plants are going to go where. Plain and simple. So if irrigation is needed, you can try modifying, you know, say like you have, maybe you're out west and you have one of these monsters that you're having to water every summer. You can modify the angles of spray and stuff to where the islands get it. Although that's not the greatest way to water new landscaping, it is a way, and you would save some dollars from installation cost of irrigation parts and pieces. Or you can go to your valve assembly and add in a few extra valves, depending on what size of project you have, and do some sod cutting trenches and other stuff. Get some drip irrigation out to each new island, and then drip irrigate the island itself. It will benefit the plants, trees, shrubs, etc. a lot better. So it's kind of like you approach it with this good, better, best type of process, you know, and it will work in the long run. Just don't shortcut yourself all the time just to save a buck, because you'll end up losing stuff or have some really shallow rooted type of plant material that if you have some kind of wind or storm event, you know, shoot, trees can get pushed over really easy with really shallow rooted. You know, look at a lot of street trees and stuff that you see that have just been knocked over because they only have a root system that's 12 inches deep and they have 30-foot canopies, and you get a wind event come in and just plops them right over, rips up the concrete sidewalk and everything else. So when construction is underway, consider the islands furthest away having the tallest trees and shrubs and stuff for that screening purpose if necessary, and then place the smaller trees and plants as the island areas get closer to your house viewing area. I think you'll really enjoy it a lot more. And the islands that are closer to you, you might want to gooch up a little bit with a little extra color, a little extra perennials, and maybe even a couple of spots where you're planting annuals. Maybe you're planting some blooming ground cover and stuff that gives you a little bit of a color splash during the growing season. So think that stuff out. Depending on the final product, a good layer of mulch over the entire island projects with, consider, a little bit of pre-emergent weed control under the mulch is a really good idea. Many times when we do a soil disturbance and planting, you can kind of bring dormant seed that has been not able to germinate. You start punching holes in with a shovel and you're planting trees and shrubs. You bring those dormant weed seeds up to the surface that have been lying there for a very long time. And all of a sudden you have all this stuff germinating a couple weeks later. And you go, what the heck is this stuff? Oftentimes it's deep placed dormant weed seeds that are up to the surface now. And now they have light and they have warmth and they have moisture. Boom, you got another problem. So think about a good mulch layer as well as maybe some pre-emergent out there. I used to tell my clients all the time, you kind of have a new baby in the house after I got done installing a new landscape for people. Same thing goes here. You know, pay attention to those new baby islands out there for about the first 60 days. You want to have, if the heavens don't open up for you, you want to have a hose at your disposal if you don't have an automated system. If you have planted and landscaped during the warmer months, you're going to want to do some supplemental irrigation. And you don't automatically water everything. You go out and you check. Your larger, more prolific trees and shrubs with bigger canopies are going to use up a lot more water than a 4-inch perennial that you have put in the ground. But you got to check each and every one of them and water accordingly. You know, you want to have a moist, not a muddy, not a standing water type of situation, but probably new trees and shrubs, a minimum, depending on what the local weather is doing for you, a minimum of once a week, probably twice a week, certainly inspect three times a week and take care of it. After that 60 days, you'll notice that trees start to take on a new personality and they start pushing new growth. Same with shrubs and perennials. You'll see that push of new growth. So you kind of know you're past the critical stage, you know, that baby sleeping through the night type of thing. So some things to pay particular attention to when you do these islands or any other landscape project. And that is, number one, you don't want to overplant it. You have to think about mature size and you have to think about 5-10 years down the road. So if you get a plant there or a tree that you know is going to grow, let's say 5 by 5, well, you don't want to put 12 of them 3 feet apart. Then you're just going to have a hedge that you're going to have to go out and butcher all the time in order to keep their individual personalities. You want to have something that in 5 to 10 years you have full but not overfilled type of look to it. So number two, know the plants you're choosing and the long-term growth and care of these plants themselves. Number three is keep those island edges sharp and clean with at least twice a month edging. Oftentimes you'll get a kind of Heinz 57 lawn that has the creepability of when you don't have sharp, clean edges, it'll want to migrate into that island. And if you planted ground cover and stuff, sometimes ground cover wants to come out of the island and into the lawn. And we don't want to have either one of them. We want to have them as separate individual show-off showpieces without a sloppy look that can be very easily attained with a little negligence, you know, a little ignorance and a little ignoring of stuff. So number four, understand that long-term plant care in situations like this may change. As trees mature, you have a change in the sun and shade needs of the understory plantings. In some cases, you might have to move, dig plants up and move them to sunnier locations. Or as shade trees start to come into their own, you might have to import filtered sun and shady type of plants rather than the original sun desirable plants. The other thing is, the last one I'll leave you with is, plant your larger trees. Remember, those are probably going to be in the further distant islands, if you have multiple islands, is don't plant them really close to the edge of the lawn. Plant them up into the center of the islands so the roots kind of stay away and they don't go wandering off in a great percentage out into the lawn area. So now you have this rumpled root mess that you're trying to have to mow over, etc. Also understand that years later, perennials, 3 to 7 years. Shrubs, depending on the type, maybe 5 to 25 years. So there may be a time where you have to go in and do some drastic pruning, or you may have to just rip it up because the plant is at the end of its life cycle, and you might have to replace it. And when you replace it, you may have a little different situations out there with mature trees, etc. So your plant selection might be just a little bit different. Well, there you go. Islands in a Sea of Green, a modification of super large lawns, and one approach that you might want to think about as far as beautifying your landscape and then providing some other benefits like your windscreens and privacy and snow breaks and other stuff you can get from these islands themselves. So what do you think? You know, you're still going to have to take care of some stuff, but at least at what you're taking care of, it's just not that green carpet. You know, to close this podcast, I'm asking for a little help from you guys. And that is, if you have listened to me here, I would appreciate you kind of following on a regular basis. But more importantly, we're trying to grow the YouTube channel. And I've noticed through analytics that 90% of my viewers are not subscribers. They're hitting runners. They come in and they learn a little something, they move on, you know, and I would really encourage you. It doesn't cost you anything. I just encourage you to hit the subscribe button and drop a like once in a while and engage with me. You know, if you walk away from one of my episodes and you're going, but what about coach if I had a, that's the type of thing you want to drop in the comments. So it encourages that involvement and really helps the algorithm. Hey, until next week, as always, to your guys' landscape success. I hope you got something out of this. I really do. And bye for now.